It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Go! Episode 818 of the Al Galdi Podcast. It is Wednesday, May 1st, 2024. It is the start of a new month. It is said that April showers bring May flowers. We'll see if that's proven true. What is true is that the Washington Commanders continue to get their flowers for what the team did in the 2024 NFL draft. The rave reviews continue. Pro Football Focus lead NFL analyst Sam Monson, he in a PFF.com piece that came out on Tuesday morning, named the Commanders draft class as one of his 10 favorite draft classes from this draft. NFL insider Adam Kaplan of Pro Football Network, he has said the following about the Commanders draft, this via a post from Pro Football Network on X on Tuesday morning, quote, "This was one of those teams that the scouting community raved about when they reviewed this draft," end quote. The praise for this Commanders draft class will not stop. Perhaps we one day will laugh, will scoff at the praise, but perhaps the praise will be proven to be justified. Hello and welcome to this Wednesday installment of the Al Galdi Podcast. Next segment, a guest worthy of praise, Commanders insider Ben Standing of The Athletic. Our first conversation since the Commanders did what they did in the 2024 NFL Draft. You will hear Ben's reaction to Commanders General Manager Adam Peters during the introductory press conference for quarterback Jaden Daniels this past Friday afternoon, saying that Daniels was the highest rated player on the Commanders draft board. You will hear Ben on whether the Commanders quarterback decision with their number two overall pick in the 2024 NFL draft ultimately was the unknown that we thought. You will hear Ben on whether Sam Hartman, who the Commanders on Monday afternoon announced as having signed as an undrafted free agent, is likely to be the team's QB3. You will hear Ben sound off on those who are upset about the Commanders left tackle situation. You will hear Ben on the meaning of the Commanders using their first 2024 second round pick on an interior defensive lineman in Johnny Newton. All of that and more with Ben Standing next segment. Also on the show, I'll talk Nationals and Orioles. The Nats four-game winning streak, which came as a result of a four-game sweep at the Miami Marlins, came to an end on Tuesday night. A 7-1 loss at the Texas Rangers, despite a good outing from starting pitcher Mackenzie Gore. 2 runs in 5 innings with 7 strikeouts versus 1 walk. The O's won a 4-2 win over the New York Yankees at Oriole Park at Camden Yards to move to a full game ahead of the Yankees for first place in the American League East. The Orioles starting pitcher, Dean Kramer, he allowed 2 runs in 7 innings. Before we get to some feedback, we on Tuesday had what is called Breakdown Day for the Capitals. Breakdown Day features end of season media availability for people. We on Tuesday heard from Caps President of Hockey Operations and General Manager Brian McClellan, Head Coach Spencer Carberry, and a number of players. Nothing earth-shattering was said, but a few things to be aware of. A, winger TJ Oshie may retire. That decision is up in the air, but he has been plagued by injury big time in recent years, and he on Tuesday made it clear that his back has become a major issue. B, defenseman Ethan Bear, who had been in the NHL and NHL Players Association's player assistance program since March 27th, now is out of the program. C, nothing definitive was said about the Caps goaltending situation, which this season featured the number two goaltender, Charlie Lindgren, becoming the number one goaltender over Darcy Kemper, despite Kemper making a lot more money. I know that there is talk of the Caps potentially trading Kemper this offseason. I actually think that the smarter play may well be to trade Lindgren. His value may never be higher off the season that he just had. He's under contract for one more season at just $1.1 million. The Caps in their retool might be able to get back something significant for Lindgren by selling high on him, as opposed to selling low on Kemper. I don't know that Charlie Lindgren all of a sudden is some stud goaltender. You have to be open to the possibility that he has reached a height that he will not be reaching again. And the Caps do have two intriguing goaltending prospects in Hunter Shepard and Clay Stevenson. And then, D, we did get some Alex Ovechkin talk. Left wing Alex Ovechkin, a slow start to his 2023-2024 regular season in terms of scoring goals, although his process stats were good. Then came a flurry of goals to where he, for the regular season, finished number one on the Caps with 31 goals. But then came Ovi in the Caps getting swept in four games by the New York Rangers in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, having no points and just five shots on goal. And Ovechkin for the Caps 4-2 loss to the Rangers at Capital One Arena in Game 4 this past Sunday night got just 15 minutes, 26 seconds of ice time. He was on what was technically the Caps' top line, but the line included Hendrix LaPierre as the center and Sonny Milano as the right wing, two guys who had been playing on the Caps' third line. So Ovechkin seemingly was demoted to the third line, with the third line just being listed as the first line. So with all of that as the backdrop regarding Alex Ovechkin, we on Tuesday morning had these exchanges between Caps insider Tarek El-Bashir of Monumental Sports Network and Spencer Carberry, and then an exchange between Tom Gallitti of NHL.com and Carberry.
What's your message to Ovi? Strong second half. We know what he did in the playoffs. He was pretty hard on himself the other night after the game.
I think I talked about it after the game. It really challenging year, long year. Felt like we were in the playoffs for 3 months. And the second half that he had and the amount of production and how much we relied on all of our top guys coming down the stretch. Because the other thing that I didn't bring up, but this is sort of something that I was thinking about from a minutes deployment, top guys, John Carlson, I'm trying to remember how many blowout or where we're up three goal games did we have this season?
Two.
Thank you.
Experience.
So when you think about that, we're playing games going down to the buzzer almost nightly. It's almost 82 games, unless we were getting beat and the score became lopsided against us. So we just had to play in those situations where the physical part is one part, but the other part is mentally having to stay in that game right to the buzzer ends every single night. And so you do that for 3 months, and it takes a toll on you. And oh, isn't 28 years old anymore. Like, he's a veteran player, and we asked a lot of him, and I put a lot on him as our captain, and he takes a lot of pride in leading the way and doing the right things and helping win a 2-1 game. And so I just think there's from a mental and physical fatigue standpoint, he went through a lot this year.
Were his minutes the other day, when he was kind of limited in the first 2 years, because of that, or was there some theory behind that?
No, I was trying to get a different matchup with that line and trying to use them in more of an offensive role with him, Sonny, and Lappy, and just keeping, trying to do my job and keeping them away from some of the New York lines. So there was a few instances where we got doubled up and had to make some adjustments on the fly. So it wasn't a plan for his, I don't know exactly what he played in the first. And then the lack of power plays, like the first three games, we had a, especially early in the game, there was more power plays than what we had the other night.
All right. Well, next season will be Alex Ovechkin's age 39 season. You can hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me, the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Email from Stanley Evans on if what the Commanders did with the number 2 overall pick in the 2024 NFL draft might impact attendance. Right, Stanley? What's going on, Galdi? Super pumped about this draft and already can't wait for training camp. I'm also a Boston Celtics fan. If you've ever been to a game at TD Garden, that home court is second to none. The crowd is a game changer. I hate the New York Knicks and the Philadelphia 76ers. All of this is to say that I watched Game 4 for the Knicks at the Sixers, and it sounded like a Knicks home game. I've never seen Philly be so outnumbered at a home game. Philly media has been criticizing Josh Harris for withholding tickets from fans and selling them at higher prices, compromising the Sixers' home court advantage. The fact that our home games have been consistently overrun by visiting teams' fans is annoying. Harris doesn't seem to be too bothered by this. He already has raised season ticket prices for this coming season. I have a lot of respect for Harris and what he's done for Washington, and that Daryl Green jersey retirement video was a moving tribute that made me proud to be a fan again. But with Jaden Daniels bringing a new level of energy to our team, I think that it's important that we represent this year and make our home games a more intimidating environment for visiting teams. Thank you for the email, Stanley. So the Commanders did have an attendance increase last season, although, of course, there still were plenty of opposing teams' fans invading what was then, but is no longer, FedEx Field. But the Commanders for the 2023 regular season were 27th out of 32 NFL teams in average home attendance, 63,950. 27th out of 32. Not good, obviously, but that is better than being dead last, which the Commanders were for the 2022 regular season, 58,106. Will there be a Jaden Daniels effect on attendance to where regular season games at what is now Commanders Field will be consistently overwhelmingly filled with Commanders fans, not opposing teams fans? The Redskins for the 2012 regular season, the sensational rookie season for quarterback Robert Griffin III, were number three in the NFL in average home game attendance, 79,654. Can / will Washington get back to that? Is that at all a realistic possibility? I actually would say yes, but that would require Jaden Daniels being great and the team doing well, and those are two ifs. And regarding one of those ifs, email from Philip C., the MD, on the Commanders taking Jaden Daniels at 2 in the 2024 NFL Draft. Writes Philip, "The Jaden Daniels selection just doesn't feel right to me. This just feels like a disaster in the waiting. That should not mean much considering my blind optimism for this franchise year after year after year that has proven wrong time after time after time. So perhaps the Seinfeldian logic might prove to be correct. Whatever my instincts say to do, do the opposite. But then again, my instincts said don't draft Patrick Ramsey, Dwayne Haskins, Chase Young, or Jamin Davis. This just better work, man. It better work. I've been feeling great about this franchise all offseason until now. Man, this better work." Thank you for the email, Philip. This better work, because if it does not work, then a whole lot of people could be out of jobs sooner rather than later. But there is reason to think that this will work. There are many things about Jaden Daniels that are reasons to think that he'll be a very good NFL quarterback. The deep ball touch, the throwing mechanics, the elite running ability, the work ethic, which already has become like legendary. I've discussed my concerns with Daniels, but I've also consistently said that there is a lot to like about Daniels. Heck, the greatest head coach in college football history said very good things about Jaden Daniels on the night of the first round of the 2024 NFL Draft. Nick Saban, who of course has schemed against Jaden Daniels. This was Saban talking Jaden Daniels on ESPN SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt late night last Thursday night. I last Friday morning posted this on X. Take a listen.
"I'm interested in what skill you believe, Nick, he has that is most ready to translate immediately to the league that you saw firsthand."
"Well, first of all, he played in pro-style type of offense, and the offense was sort of built around him. The one thing that he does well that people don't maybe give him enough credit for, he has improved dramatically as a passer in the last 2 years and probably since he was at Arizona State. So this guy can throw the deep ball, and if there's anything he probably needs to do a little better, the game's going to speed up on him a little bit. He's going to have to get the ball out a little quicker, maybe at times. But the thing I like about him is he steps up in the pocket. So many of these college quarterbacks drift. They drift into the rush, so they create more problems for themselves than really in helping themselves. So he steps up in the pocket, and if it's open, he's taken off. You're going to have to defend this guy like Lamar Jackson because he is fast. Now, the only thing about that is he's going to have to work on his size and strength a little bit so he has the durability to be able to play that way. But when this guy takes off, he can actually outrun angles on defense like nobody's business. So this guy is Randall Cunningham type of runner, but a really, really good passer. Don't underestimate this guy as a passer. He's accurate. He can throw the long ball. I think he's got a good feel for the passing game. He gets the ball in the right place at the right time.
Okay, so Nick Saban comping Jaden Daniels to Lamar Jackson and Randall Cunningham. Does that guarantee anything with Jaden Daniels? No, but that was nice to hear. And I bet that Nick Saban also would tell you that if you have a case, you should contact Paulson and Ace. If you have been harmed by the negligence of someone else, or if someone who you care about has been harmed by the negligence of someone else, always know that the law firm of Paulson and Ace is there for you. If you have a case, contact Paulson and Ace. Call 202-902-7611, and when you call, make sure that you tell Paulson and Ace that Al Galdi sent you. Paulson and Nace is a Washington, D.C.-based family law firm that handles medical malpractice, personal injury, birth injury, legal malpractice, and consumer protection cases, offering aggressive advocacy for victims in Washington, D.C. and West Virginia. Paulson and Nace fights for victims of all kinds of situations, including victims of errors made during diagnosis, during surgery, or with medication, victims of injuries caused by dangerous medications or medical devices, as well as defective auto parts, victims of accidents involving cars, trucks, bikes, or motorcycles, victims of deceptive trade practices and false advertising, heck, victims of shady lawyers. If your attorney acts in bad faith, is unethical in his or her counsel, or is negligent in his or her work, you could have a claim for legal malpractice. Paulson and Nace has represented corporate clients throughout the region. Attorneys Chris Nace and Matt Nace are experienced trial attorneys who are not afraid to take cases to trials, and that's because Paulson and Nace wins trials. If you feel that you've been wronged, if you think that you've been wronged but aren't sure, call Paulson and Nace and schedule a no-obligation appointment. Call 202-902-7611. That's 202-902-7611. And when you call, tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. You can also visit PaulsonandNace.com. That's PaulsonandNace.com. Just don't forget to tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. Paulson and Nace, if you have a case, contact Paulson and Nace.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey, if you are listening to this podcast via Apple Podcasts or Spotify, you can rate the podcast with a star rating. 5-star ratings are greatly appreciated. They help us out a lot. Thank you for doing them. The last time that we spoke with our friend Ben Standig was on episode 810 of the podcast, and we were in the midst of all of the noise regarding LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels. Do you remember the noise? We had Top Golf Gate. We had the behavior of Daniels' agent, Ron Butler, on X. We had indications from national NFL insiders that Daniels didn't really want to be drafted by the Commanders. Well, here we are now, less than 2 weeks later, and all of that noise seems like a long time ago. And all of that noise was perhaps a big fat nothing. The Commanders last Thursday night took Jaden Daniels with the number 2 overall pick in the 2024 NFL draft, and that was the start of a Commanders draft in which they selected 9 players and for which the team is receiving rave reviews. The angst and chaos of a short time ago have been replaced by joy and excitement. What a difference an NFL draft can make. I'm very pleased to welcome back to the Al Galdi podcast Commanders insider Ben Standig of The Athletic. Ben does an awesome job of covering the Commanders, writes a lot of good stuff for The Athletic. He also is the host of a podcast, the Standig Room Only podcast. You can follow Ben on X at Ben Standig. Ben, the 2024 NFL draft is over. The rest of our lives now can happen. How are you?
Yeah, you're not wrong about that. The rest of our lives. I mean, yeah, it's been a journey. You know, God forbid I suggest to the football gods that we're turning a page. But honestly, you know, since all the Dan Snyder stuff began back in 2020, I legitimately think this is the first time that any of us can really take a breath, because even once he sold, it was immediately a new era. We got to meet Josh Harris. We got to learn what's going on there. We're on Ron Rivera watch. Eric Bieniemy's involved. Sam Howell. It's been a whirlwind. And like, really, I think, and once Ron was out, you know, within a week, here comes Adam Peters. Bob Myers is there. They hired Dan Quinn. That's had controversy. Free agency, they signed 800 players in draft. So it's quite remarkable that we've made it all this time. And honestly, I really do think this is like the first time where we can all be like, okay, I think this is kind of the team. Don't argue with me, like left tackle. I mean, I get it. There's gonna be some other moves made, but just in general, it's pretty remarkable that we've made it this far.
It is, and it is nice to be at that point. I'm interested in your take on this. So we, this past Friday afternoon, had the introductory press conference for Jaden Daniels. Commanders General Manager Adam Peters, during this press conference, unsolicited, said that Daniels was the highest rated player on the Commanders draft board. This was Peters during his press conference opening statement.
Like I told some of you guys who were here last night, we're getting a special, special player. Jaden was the highest ranked player on our entire draft board. But even more so, we're getting a special, special person.
All right. So Adam Peters, quote, Jaden was the highest ranked player on our entire draft board, end quote. Now, that could mean that Jaden Daniels was the highest ranked player on the Commanders draft board at the time of the number 2 overall pick. That also could mean that Daniels was the highest ranked player on the Commanders draft board going into the draft, i.e. that Peters had Daniels as the QB1 in the 2024 NFL draft ahead of the quarterback who went number 1 overall, USC's Caleb Williams. Do you have a sense of what Peters meant in saying, quote, Jaden was the highest ranked player on our entire draft board, end quote?
Yeah, I joked with somebody after he said that. When do you think that this was he the number 1 before the pick or after the pick? Look, I mean, at a worst case, he was presumably the number 2 player on their board. So really, it's just a matter of, are you saying, is he better than Caleb Williams or not? It's not inconceivable. There were people, when I did my survey it's, you know, about a month or so ago now, were asked a bunch of sources around the league, give me your top four. I think there were 17 sources, and three of them did say Jaden Daniels. Others said they were at least, like, you know, kind of neck and neck, but they went with Caleb. I had, when asking some people around the league this week, hey, what'd you think of their draft? You know, one GM said to me, you could argue he was, you know, based on the tape this year, right? He was the Heisman winner. Caleb Williams wasn't. That based on the tape this year, that he was the number one guy. So I don't know. I mean, I assume that whether Peters was being straight or, you know, just trying to, pump up the kid. Sure. Whatever floats their boat, I'm happy to hear. If they believe he was number one guy, great.
We, in the weeks leading up to the 2024 NFL draft, talked so much about this Commanders quarterback decision with the number two overall pick and the lack of indications from the team about what it was going to do. And yet, by the time that we got to this past Thursday night, basically the entire world expected the Commanders to take Jaden Daniels at two, and they did. And it's now being reported that the Commanders were not deciding between Daniels and North Carolina quarterback Drake May, that the decision at two was between Daniels and Michigan quarterback J.J. McCarthy, who was not taken until the number 10 overall pick. And Adam Peters, during his post-first-round press conference late night last Thursday night, essentially said that Daniels was the choice all along, and that the team just wanted to go through a proper pre-draft process to confirm that feeling. So, bottom line, did it actually end up being that the decision at two was not the unknown that it had seemed like it was?
Well, whether we knew anything or not was one thing. Whether they knew what they wanted to do was another. And I never really emphasized, as I'm looking back, the idea that they didn't know. I just emphasized that we didn't know. I think the one thing that was unknown was when did Adam Peters really kind of figure this out? He told us that, you know, logically, he told us at one point early on with San Francisco that he wasn't, you know, he learned the art of time management, and because, you know, they had Brock Purdy and they're fighting a different fight. They're trying to figure out what's the missing pieces to win the Super Bowl, that he wasn't really that in on, as an evaluator on the quarterbacks, beyond just watching games and things like, you know, things like that. So the question was, you know, what mindset did he come into? And he basically said, once he turned on the tape here, he was blown away, and, you know, all that. You know, again, in these circumstances, take everything they all say and then knock off about, I don't know, 10-20% to get to the reality. But at least he came in at that point seemingly with fresh eyes to the situation. So whether that was 1 month in, 2 months in, but, you know, they had to go to the senior, his pro day, they had to go to the combine. I don't know exactly where along the way that landed. You know, the J.J. McCarthy stuff, you know, I can't remember if we talked about it on here or if it was just me talking to my cat, but, like, you know, the week or so before, I just realized, like, I could never shake the McCarthy thing. And you know, and I had laid out for myself, and I think for my audience, why I could make it was weird, because you could make compelling cases for all of them. And the case, as I said, for McCarthy at the time was, for some people, he reminds them not necessarily of Brock Purdy per se, but that the type of quarterback that Brock Purdy is the type that Kyle Shanahan has an affinity for, somebody who, you know, plays on time, somebody who's willing to make, you know, some throws over the middle. He's got some athleticism to move when he has to. And that J.J. McCarthy was that guy. And when, you know, when you remember that Peters was with him for 7 years, and he was literally Dan Quinn's offensive coordinator for that Atlanta Super Bowl team, Kyle Shanahan's influence has got to be felt somewhere, even if it's just in their head, their subconscious mind. So it didn't surprise me in that regard that McCarthy would be somebody they would find interesting. And I also don't think that, as while he of the three seemed to be the least, the worst fit per se, worst being, you know, not a big deal, but worst fit for a Cliff Kingsbury offense, you can't make this decision based on Kingsbury, who knows that he could be gone by next year because he gets a head coaching job or goes off to college or, you know, flies to Tibet, who knows, right? So it seemed reasonable. And, you know, as I've told you before, what that survey showed and talking to people, the width of the Drake May conversation was from, yeah, he could be the best guy in this draft to, boy, really? This guy's got enough flaws. It's going to take too long. Not saying McCarthy didn't have some of that, but a lot less. It was a classic. If you charted it off, the ceiling for Drake May was closer to Daniels. The floor seemed to be below. McCarthy wasn't at that ceiling level, but his floor seemed to be maybe even a little bit higher than May's, or at least, you know, whatever complaints were coming out of him, it was more about, you know, he just didn't have the same upside as the other guys. So I'm not surprised that that's the way that played out. But again, look, Drake May went 3, McCarthy went 10. It's all a lot of eye of the beholder stuff. So, you know, Peters didn't come out and tell us that, but that's what, you know, some notion of that existed pre, and then I think, you know, Schefter threw that out there just for fun at the end.
While we're talking quarterback, the Commanders on Monday afternoon officially announced the signings of 11 undrafted free agents, among them Notre Dame quarterback Sam Hartman. And as you and others have reported, the Commanders gave Hartman significant money for an undrafted free agent, a $225,000 guaranteed base salary plus a $20,000 signing bonus. The T-Mac quarterback also has Jeff Driscoll and Jake Fromm, in addition to, of course, Jaden Daniels and Marcus Mariota. But that money for Hartman, to me, says that he's the likely QB3 for the 2024 season. Is that how you see the situation?
Well, I mean, at a minimum, they locked him in to bring him in, and they decided that they find him interesting enough. I mean, look, I guess if he comes into camp and, you know, vomits all over himself, then maybe they, you know, it's not like it's a lot of money for me. It's probably not. It's probably just a dent in the Galdi fortune over there. But you know, for an organization, it's not like that big of a deal. But yes, it is a significance component. And I was talking during the draft, like, you know, when I did my various mock draft iterations, like, hey, look, I'm gonna keep putting a second quarterback in this draft. Now, when they brought in Jeff Driscoll, that was the one I was like, okay, I don't know, maybe Jeff Driscoll, who's, I think I looked, he, like, in his 6 or 7 seasons, he started at least one game in every year, so it's not like he's he's not a guy you want on the field, but he is a guy that teams clearly feel comfortable enough to have on their roster when need be. So then you bring him in. I wasn't, you know, sorry for Jake Fromm, but cause it looks like he's going to be clearly the odd man out, I would say. I mean, I guess I would say Hartman would be I would bet on him as the third guy. Is there a world where they can sneak him onto the practice squad? You know, that's always at the risk, right? You know, if they had to pay him that much money, then somebody else, presumably, if not multiple somebody else's, wanted him as well. And, you know, once you get down 5 months from now, things change, things fade. How many times have we discussed this? Oh, they're never going to get him on the practice squad. And then they do, whoever it is. So I would assume QB3, but at least it gives them an option for the practice squad as well. But I will say the biggest part to me is he may be QB2 next year. Like, if things go well, that I would imagine is the point, because none of these other guys, including Mariota, are going to be here next year, presumably. But if Sam Hartman is signing a contract, then he would be. So that to me is the more notable part. 2025, he may be the backup to Jaden Daniels if things go well.
Much more with Ben Standig in moments. I'm going to next ask Ben about the Commanders' left tackle situation. You may have questions about the team at left tackle, but you should have no questions about the greatness of what Nova Fireplace and Stove right now is offering to listeners of the Al Galdi podcast who live in Northern Virginia. Multiple great deals. Deal number one, $25 off any gas fireplace service, chimney cleaning, or chimney inspection. There's no need to go into next heating season unprepared. Get prepared now and at a discounted price. And deal number two, call it a Jaden Daniels special. For those of you with masonry fireplaces, an in-stock wood insert for the extremely discounted price of just $5,000. $300. The usual price is $9,000, and that price of $5,300 includes installation, permit, and county/city inspection. There are just two in-stock wood inserts left, so call now to get yours. Call 571-513-3803. Talk to Stuart Moore. He is the general manager. He's a big Commanders fan and a loyal listener of this podcast. And make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you to get the special offers. Nova Fireplace and Stove is outstanding. It is family-owned. It is a five-star dealer. Nova Fireplace and Stove also installs generators, water heaters, security lights, and custom outdoor kitchens. There is so much that Nova Fireplace and Stove can do for you. Visit NovaFireplaceAndStove.com to check out customer reviews. Contact Nova Fireplace and Stove and get the customer service that you deserve. 571-513-3803. And make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you to get the special offers. That's Nova Fireplace and Stove, 571-513-3803. And make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. More now with Commanders insider Ben Standing of The Athletic off what the team did in the 2024 NFL draft. The issue of left tackle. I get the concern from some fans about the team not having an obvious starting left tackle. I also find it ridiculous to think that Adam Peters doesn't value left tackle and or doesn't have a plan for left tackle and or might not know more than the rest of us do. As you reported in a piece that came out on Monday morning, quote, the Commanders tried trading into the first round with multiple teams aiming as high as the mid to late teens. Half the NFL needs offensive tackle talent, as evidenced by five going by pick 18, end quote. The team did take TCU offensive tackle Brandon Coleman in the third round of the 2024 NFL draft. The team in March re-signed offensive tackle Cornelius Lucas as an unrestricted free agent. If you want to keep drilling, the team still has offensive tackle Trent Scott. Where are you on where the Commanders are at regarding left tackle?
How dare you forget that Braden Daniels is still around?
That's right.
Yeah. So my basic point where I get so annoyed with this topic is, like, if you, I don't care who you are, if you're a fan, if you're in the media, whoever you are, if you're going to scold Adam Peters, like you said, of course he's aware. That's the team that traded for Trent Williams, for goodness sake. Like, I mean, obviously he's aware that you need it. But, like, two things I would say. One, if your argument is solely on left tackle, then you're missing the bigger point. There are questions on three positions on the offensive line, I would say, right? It's not like Andrew Wiley suddenly turned into John Jansen at right tackle. I mean, I don't think he's as bad last year as people suggest, but okay. Could you improve on that if the draft fell a certain way? Sure. Left guard, I know Allegretti signed a 3-year deal. He was still the backup on the Chiefs last year. I mean, I give him credit for what he did in the Super Bowl, but, you know, to me, it reminds me of, like, the Wes Schweitzer situation. Good enough to start, but I wouldn't, like, say pencil him in. He's the guy, but okay. And then you have the left tackle spot. I do think people are underrating Cornelius Lucas to an extent. My thing with Lucas is, you know, until you've proven you can do something, how do we know? And he's never been a 17-game kind of a guy. The Brandon Coleman thing, people say, hey, he needed to draft a left tackle. Well, they did. I don't know why. I guess because a lot of people, you know, even to this day, either view him more as a guard or think he's better as a guard, but they don't. So it's just bizarre to me that, like, we keep acting like they didn't do that. Is Lucas and Coleman enough in general, let alone when you have this prized possession at quarterback? Needless to say, I don't know. I think if you go back and look at other quarterbacks who've been injured in their time in Washington, I don't think a rookie left tackle was starting at any of those scenarios. So, And then the last point is, you know, and I've seen this said over again, they have all this money. They could have gotten anybody they wanted. Cool. You tell me who was the guy. Typically the number one rated left tackle that switched a team was Tyron Smith, who's obviously got, like, a Hall of Fame career, but he's 33. He's missed a ton of games over the last few years. And I'm sure he's looking to go to a contender because, you know, at this stage of his career, why wouldn't he? He goes to the Jets. Say whatever you want about the Jets, but, like, they are in that mix if Aaron Rodgers stays healthy. And the Jets are so confident that he's the guy that they used the 11th pick in the draft on his replacement or backup. That is the point there. And then if you get past him, where? Like, people are like, well, why didn't they send Jonah Williams? Well, I think Jonah Williams is kind of more of a right tackle anyway, but, you know, I mean, he's a guy. And then the Bengals replaced Jonah Williams with Trent Brown. I mean, they're fine, but those moves happened weeks ago. The Commanders still didn't even know what they were doing yet. It is not the idea that, like, they're going to go out there and sign some, like, all-star is nuts. And then if you look at the – put that aside. I mean, by the way, 31 other teams have their own goals, right? Like, you can't just say – yeah, well, it's not walking into Target and saying, pull that off the shelf, pull that off the shelf. Anyway, then you get to what's there now. Mekhi Becton would have been a lot of people said, get him. He just signed to be a backup. I mean, they can tell me whatever excuses they want as to why that happened, but he signed to be a backup. You know, Andres Pete, he's been a guard most of his career. DJ Humphreys. I mean, that one is at least like, okay, he played under Cliff Kingsbury. To me, somebody who has a connection to Kingsbury or Quinn or Peters or what, you know, I could see something there. But again, I'm not suggesting that they've done enough to left tackle for the long haul, but I am suggesting to a certain degree, there's only so much you can do in one off season. They kept Lucas. He's been proven to be fine. I mean, you tell me, Al, how many times over the last 4 years when Lucas came in, we're like, oh no, it was fine. I mean, they're great, but you know, he was okay. And like, sometimes that's kind of all you can do. So I didn't really have a huge issue with this. You know, I know people say if Daniels were to get hurt, knock on wood, oh, we told you. Yeah, sure. Whatever you want, whatever floats your boat. But like, there just wasn't this was a bad year in free agency for tackles. They tried to move up. I mean, I think that's a point that's weird. Like, like I said, I reported this as the others that they tried to move up. Yet people act like they didn't try to do anything. Like, I don't know what to tell you. So it's a concern, but it is what it is. I mean, there's only so much you can do about it, and they'll have to figure it out. Maybe they add somebody. And by the way, like, I kind of feel like they have to keep a fourth tackle. I don't know who the fourth tackle is. You can do better than Trent Scott. I would look at it like that, right? You could probably sign somebody who's better than him, and that may be the best they can do, but that's not necessarily a bad thing either. So that's how I would look at it. But what do you think?
I just go back to this. If you in January were super excited about the Commanders hiring Adam Peters as general manager, then you in late April / early May shouldn't all of a sudden think that Peters is a dummy who has no idea what he's doing at left tackle. Like, there's a benefit of the doubt that I think he deserves right now. And I do wonder if the Commanders in the coming weeks will sign a left tackle in free agency, perhaps someone who has yet to be released by another NFL team, a la what went down with Charles Leno Jr. in May 2021. A lot gets made of the supporting cast for a young quarterback. With the Commanders now having Jaden Daniels, how would you describe the supporting cast that he has with the team?
Well, I mean, I think the playmaker part is, you know, reasonable to better than that. You know, obviously Terry's been, I think we probably have like overestimated Terry to an extent, but obviously he's been very good since he's been in the league. You know, Brian Robinson has been a, you know, very good, you know, hammer kind of running back. They bring in Austin Eckler. If the reports are accurate, that and what he himself said, that last year with the Chargers got derailed because of this high ankle sprain when the year started, and he never really recovered. If that's true, and he still has, you know, not lead the league in touchdown chops, but just, you know, still pretty good, then that's not bad. You know, the tight end room is a bit underwhelming. They did add Ben Sinnott in the second round. One of the picks that I think people saw, you know, was a little bit of a mixed bag of reaction to that. Some people really like the versatility and potential, and other people think it was a reach at that spot. So I think from that perspective, it's fine. You know, would you like, you know, they add Luke McCaffrey. Would you like to have that 6'4" monster on the outside? Sure. Would you like to have somebody who is just a pure burner? Sure. Would you like a better tight end? Sure. But like, I think all things being reasonable, it's not a bad spot. for him to be in. And I do think the Eckler part of this to me is going to be pretty huge because as a pass catcher, you know, that's such a great safety valve to have coming out of the backfield. If he can be, again, I don't want to put the ceiling to where he was before, but if he can be a really effective guy out of there, I think that could be a huge weapon as well. So, you know, I think all things being equal, they did okay. But again, like, there's upsides and downsides when you're playing for the future. And I've been saying all along, they're making moves for 2025, including signing guys to 1-year deals when they won't be here. This is just about getting through this season to a certain degree, improving, but not committing yourself long term. If they can get through, you know, if they can get through this, if some guys step up more than we expect, then, you know, it could be, you know, even better than what I'm suggesting. But I think it's generally fine. I just don't want to go over the top and say, wow, he's got everything he possibly needs, because I don't think that.
I really like that Adam Peters in the 2024 NFL draft abided by the philosophy of best player available, BPA. That to me is the way to do an NFL draft. And so I had zero problem with the Commanders using their first 2024 second round pick on an interior defensive lineman in Illinois' Johnny Newton. That said, does the team taking Newton say anything to you about how it feels about either of its two staples along the interior defensive line, Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne? Or do you view the selection of Newton as purely BPA and that there's no other takeaway?
Well, I view it as BPA. However, when we were in the media room right before the day started, like, I never really considered Johnny Newton when I was doing my mock drafts, because in a hypothetical world like that, sure, we can point to Jonathan Allen's big salary cap hit in 2025. And I did have them draft defensive tackles, but, like, you know, round 3, round 4 sometimes, right? Because it is a question. But when it became real that the guy, one of the three players that I had in my first round who mock draft who fell out was still on the board, I was like saying, hey, it's not going to surprise me if this is the guy, because, you know, some people were projecting he could go as high as 21 to the Dolphins when they, you know, they have their own defensive tackle need. He was at least being discussed in the 20s. So him falling out, like, yeah, he A, could be the best player on their board, which Peter said, and if they took him, it's not that crazy. I mean, look, who is the backup defensive tackle right now? I guess we would say Fedarian Mathis, but that's just based on draft status. It's not based on things we've seen necessarily. So I think it's both a need and a potentially a sign to say what they think going forward of Allen. And, you know, I've been talking about this for a long time. If Allen, you know, if they don't sign an extension there, you can probably guess this would be his last year based on the cap hit. But we'll see if they still do. So it could be a reflection of that, but I think at a minimum, it just makes big short-term, long-term sense, and that's why I didn't really have an issue with that one.
You, during Adam Peters' press conference late night on Friday night, discussing what Peters did in rounds 2 and 3 of the 2024 NFL draft, asked him about the BPA philosophy. Did you at any point during Ron Rivera's 4 years as Washington head coach, in the coach-centric approach, think that the team went BPA into the NFL draft? Or is what Peters just did the first time in at least a long time that Washington went BPA?
I definitely did not think they were employing best player available philosophy. I mean, you know, 2020, like, so for example, well, that taking Chase Young may have been a BPA pick in a sense that, like, they were already over, you know, to a degree over invested in the defensive line anyway. And while Chase Young was viewed as the best non-quarterback on the board, it kind of, and I'm not, this is not a hindsight thing, it kind of didn't make a ton of sense in that, as we decide, just because for the next, like, couple of years, at some point you're going to have to pay somebody here. You can't extend all four of them. So how does that work? But anyway, but then you go back 2021. I had Jamin Davis as, you can go back and look, and when I did my, at that point it was 3 different mocks, 3 path scenarios. In the main scenario, Jamin Davis was my pick. Why is that? Because it seemed to me apparent that Ron Rivera was kind of set on getting a linebacker, you know, his own Luke, his next Luke Kuechly, all those types of things. In 2020, right? Now, in 2022, I didn't really think they should take receiver, but that seemed to be the talk, right? All the way throughout, they could take Chris Olave or whomever. And then they'd take a receiver. And then last year, not only did they take one cornerback to sort of offset the William Jackson aspect of it all, they took essentially two defensive backs, even though Quan Martin, I understand to an extent that you could look at it like best player because there was no room for him to play, but it seemed like they were just sort of they were going down that path, like they just wanted more defensive backup. So no, I don't really think they did that. I mean, I think that's one of the things that was frustrating about the Rivera era in general, is that they would have one idea and then that was it. Like, I don't know how many trades the Eagles ended up making the other day. It's not even that I can't imagine that previous regime doing that. I can't imagine they could consider it. Like, it would be impossible to maneuver like that. So no, I think that in general, in the first, the first day or two, they were like, what do we need? Let's go do that, as opposed to, something else. But in fairness to them, like after the first season, they were trying to make the playoffs. That's what was so good about this draft, I think, for Peters. I'm a process guy. Independent of how these players turn out, going for need off a 4-win team would be silly. They have holes everywhere. You mentioned me asking Peters about that. I can't remember exactly how I phrased it, but I basically said, yeah, you went BPA, even though, no offense, you have needs everywhere. Yeah. And I meant because of what they inherited, not because of what anything they've done. So they didn't take one position in the draft over seven rounds that we're like, well, that doesn't make any sense. They need everything. So the only position you could have argued was they didn't was a running back and then quarterback once they took Daniels, and they didn't do those. So yeah, I think this was an opportunity to go pure BPA. They did it, and I don't recall thinking they were doing that previously.
Commanders insider Ben Standing of The Athletic. Ben, thank you, and we'll talk soon.
Al, always a pleasure, man. Thanks.
Well, the Nationals on Tuesday night began a stretch of 14 consecutive games against American League teams, and the Nats began that stretch with a loss, a 7-1 loss at the reigning defending World Series champion Texas Rangers in Game 1 of a 3-game series. The Nats for this 2024 MLB regular season now are 14-15. A rough night for the Nats offense. The Nats scored just one run, totaled just three hits, and worked no walks, and all three of the Nats' hits were singles, and two of the hits were infield singles. The Nats got worked by the Rangers starting pitcher John Gray. He allowed one run in eight innings. Your three Nationals hits on Tuesday night: C.J. Abrams, he has the Nats starting shortstop and number one batter, went 1-for-4 with an infield single, and he had a stolen base. Abrams, in the Nats one-run first, had a leadoff infield single on a tapper toward first base on a 1-2 pitch, and he then, on the very next pitch, stole second base. Luis Garcia Jr., he is the Nats starting second baseman and number four batter, went 1-for-3 with an RBI single. He and that Nats one-run first had a two-out opposite field RBI single to left field on a 1-2 pitch for a 1-0 Nats lead. And Trey Lipscomb, he as the Nats starting third baseman and number eight batter, went 1-for-3 with an infield single. He committed a throwing error, but Lipscomb in the top of the fifth had a two-out opposite field infield single on a swinging bunt toward first base on an 0-2 pitch. And those were your three Nationals hits on Tuesday night. Another rough game for Eddie Rosario. He is the Nats starting right fielder and number seven batter, went 0-for-3. Rosario, for this regular season now, has an OPS of 299. That is horrendous. You wonder how long the Nats are going to be playing Eddie Rosario. The Nats, this past March 8th, signed Rosario to a minor league contract with an on-roster invitation to Major League spring training. He has talent, but keep in mind, I mean, he was signed to a minor league contract for a reason, and he so far in this regular season has an OPS of 299. That is brutal. The biggest bright spot for the Nats in this 7-1 loss at the Rangers on Tuesday night was the Nats starting pitcher, Mackenzie Gore. He allowed 2 runs in 5 innings with 7 strikeouts versus 1 walk. Gore gave up 5 hits, which were a triple and 4 singles. He issued a hit by pitch. He, over his 5 innings, threw a lot of pitches, but also a good number of strikes, 91 pitches, 59 strikes versus 32 balls. Gore in the bottom of the fourth allowed a run on 3 consecutive singles to begin the inning, including an RBI single by Jonah Heim through the left side of the infield to tie the game at 1. Gore in the bottom of the fifth allowed a run. He gave up a 1-out opposite field triple by Marcus Semien to deep right center field, where the ball was misplayed by the aforementioned Eddie Rosario as the Nats right fielder as he approached a diagonal portion of the outfield wall at Globe Life Field. So a tough play, but a play that could have been made. Semien scored on a 1-out RBI groundout by Corey Seager. Gore then issued a 2-out walk, followed by issuing a 2-out hit-by-pitch, but Gore got out of the inning by only allowing the 1 run. And so Mackenzie Gore now in this regular season, 6 starts, an ERA of 3.19, a whip of 1.35, a strikeouts per 9 innings of 11.03. And he's doing this with a batting average on balls in play allowed, a BABIP allowed of 392, which is significantly higher than the league average of around 300 and suggests some bad luck. So Gore's numbers, in theory, could be even better. Very pleased with what we're seeing from Mackenzie Gore. But while Mackenzie Gore was good on Tuesday night, the Nats bullpen was not good on Tuesday night. 3 Nats relievers combined to allow 5 runs in 3 innings. Jordan Weems in the bottom of the 6th allowed a run on a one-out solo homer by Josh Smith to right field on an 0-2 pitch for a 3-1 Rangers lead. Although, in fairness to Weems, the homer went just 364 feet per the StatCast projection. Jacob Barnes in the bottom of the 7th allowed a run. And Tanner Rainey in the bottom of the 8th allowed 3 runs as his struggles continue. Rainey issued a 1-out walk. Issued a 1-out wild pitch, gave up a 1-out RBI single, gave up a 1-out 2-run homer, and gave up a 2-out single. The homer, it was a 1-out full-count 2-run homer by the Rangers' number 9 batter, Leody Taveras, for a 7-1 Rangers lead, and the homer went a projected 415 feet per StatCast. Tanner Rainey in this inning threw 35 pitches, just 18 strikes versus 17 balls. Tanner Rainey now for this regular season, 11 innings pitched, 12 earned runs, 21 hits allowed, 10 walks allowed. His ERA is 9.82. His whip is 2.82. Those numbers are atrocious. His comeback from Tommy John surgery that he underwent in August 2022 is not going well. And you got to think that some kind of roster move is coming. This has become untenable. This was Nats manager Davey Martinez during his postgame session with reporters on Tuesday night with an assessment of the Nats at 14-15 in the 2024 regular season through the month of April.
Yeah, you look back and there's some games that we could have won. We could have been above 500, right? But overall, you know, we're playing good baseball. We're playing hard. Our pitchers are done well. Other than today, our bullpen's been pretty good. So we got to keep going. It's like I said, it's April. It's nice to win games in April. So now we're going into May, and you know, I break the season down. You know, and I always tell myself if we can win 15 games a month. That's pretty good, right? So you know, let's win 16 next month.
And game 2 for the Nats at the Rangers is on Wednesday night at 8:05. Trevor Williams will be the Nats starting pitcher. Well, the Orioles are off to a rather nice start in their big 4-game series against the New York Yankees at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. Monday evening, a 2-0 win. Tuesday evening, a 4-2 win as the O's, Joe Angel, again, were in the win column.
And the Orioles, again, in the win column.
Yes, Joe, the win column, and the O's now have a one-game lead on the Yankees for first place in the American League East. The O's for this 2024 MLB regular season now are 19-10, whereas the Yankees are 19-12. And how about this? The O's now have gone 16 consecutive regular season series against division opponents without a series loss, longest such streak in team history. More terrific pitching by the O's on Tuesday evening. We in the Orioles, a 2-0 win over the Yankees on Monday evening, saw starting pitcher Grayson Rodriguez toss 5 2/3 scoreless innings. We in this 4-2 win over the Yankees on Tuesday evening saw Dean Kramer allow 2 runs in 7 innings. He gave up just 4 hits, which were 2 home runs and 2 singles. He did issue 4 walks. He did record just 4 strikeouts, 93 pitches, 57 strikes versus 36 balls. The peripherals do not blow you away, but the run prevention was quite good. Kramer in the top of the third gave up a leadoff first pitch home run by Austin Wells to center field to tie the game at 1. The homer went a projected 414 feet per Statcast. And Kramer in the top of the sixth gave up a 1-out full count solo homer by ex-Nationals player Juan Soto on a moonshot to right field to cut the Orioles' lead to 4-2. That homer went a projected 447 feet per Statcast. So Kramer gave up a couple of bombs, but bottom line, Kramer allowed 2 runs in 7 innings and was impressive. For a second consecutive start, Kramer in his previous outing, the Orioles' 6-5 win at the Los Angeles Angels last Wednesday, April 24th, officially allowed 2 runs in 5 1/3 innings with 10 strikeouts versus 1 walk. He gave up just 3 hits, which were a solo homer and 2 singles, and the homer and one of the singles came over the final 2 batters he faced. So Dean Kramer was good on Tuesday evening, and then came the Orioles bullpen. 2 Orioles relievers combined for 2 scoreless innings with 4 strikeouts. Keegan Aiken in the top of the 8th faced 3 batters and got 2 outs, and Jacob Webb faced 4 batters and got 4 outs for the save. He generated 3 swinging strikeouts, and he did this in facing the Yankees numbers 3 through 6 batters in Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, Anthony Rizzo, and Gleyber Torres. Webb was terrific as O's manager Brandon Hyde for a second consecutive game did not go to his closer, Craig Kimbrell. Now, Kimbrell is dealing with upper back tightness, but he this past weekend blew a save chance in each of his 2 appearances in a 3-game series against the Oakland A's at Oriole Park at Camden Yards, a series in which the O's lost 2 of 3 games. But the Orioles bullpen in this big series against the Yankees has been great so far. The 2-0 win on Monday evening, 3 Orioles relievers, Cionel Perez, Yadier Cano, and Danny Coulomb combined for 3 1/3 scoreless innings. Brandon Hyde with this bullpen is finding a way to get the job done against the Yankees. This was Hyde during his post-game press conference on Tuesday night on the work of his bullpen in this 4-2 win over the Yankees on Tuesday evening. And then you'll hear multiple follow-up exchanges, including one on Dean Kramer.
That's what you call gutsy out of the pen. That's 2 guys that would pitch the 8th and 9th inning that were totally fatigued. And totally stepped up, bulldog mentality. Well, I had Webby up 3 times yesterday. And Ake went 30-plus 2 innings a couple days ago. And they both sucked it up before the game, knowing how short we were in the bullpen. And staying away from a lot of people tonight. And just outstanding. Just shows you the kind of competitors both those guys are.
Kimbrell threw extensively before the game. Were you gonna keep away from him another night?
Yeah, he would have pitched there if I wouldn't have. But yeah, I'm hoping he's available tomorrow.
How big was it for Dean to go 7?
That was unbelievable because, like I said, we had very few guys that I was gonna pitch tonight, and for him to battle, compete, mix. He's just really turning into a really good starting pitcher since the second half of last year for me. He just knows how to pitch now, 4 pitches for strikes, has confidence in his sinker, gets the cutter in the right places, can dunk curveballs in, and the split finger is getting better and better. So really impressed with how Dean's throwing the ball.
Yeah, really good pitching by the O's in this 4-2 win over the Yankees on Tuesday evening. The Orioles' offense in this game was so-so. The O's scored 4 runs. The O's totaled 9 hits, which were made up of 3 doubles and 6 singles. The O's worked 2 walks. The O's went 4-for-10 with runners in scoring position. That was key. 8 of the Orioles' 9 players in the team's lineup each had at least 1 hit. Nobody had a really big game. The O's scored 3 runs in the bottom of the 4th. A big hit in that inning, a James McCann went out first pitch RBI double to deep left field for a 2-1 Orioles lead. McCann, as the Orioles starting catcher and number 8 batter, went 1-for-4 with the RBI double. Game 3 for the O's against the Yankees at Oriole Park at Camden Yards is on Wednesday evening at 6:35. The Orioles ace Corbin Burnes will be the Orioles starting pitcher. And that will do it for you and me for now. Keep the feedback coming. You can hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Thursday show, episode 818, will provide you with more on the Commanders. Also on Thursday show, I'll talk Nationals and Orioles. The Nats are at the Texas Rangers Wednesday night at 8:05 for game 2 of a 3-game series. The O's are home to the New York Yankees Wednesday evening at 6:35 for game 3 of a 4-game series. Have a great rest of your Wednesday, and I'll talk to you on Thursday.
Like I told some of you guys who were here last night, we're getting a special, special player. Jaden was the highest-ranked player on our entire draft board. But even more so, we're getting a special, special person.